Hey, everybody. This week, Paul and I are going to dissect the conversation we had with our mastermind group of about five other infinite banking concepts practitioners on what to do with a big lump sum of cash that comes into your life. And maybe call it a windfall or whatever it may be, but there's some different options and there's not one right answer for everybody, right, Paul?
No, there's not. And I think it really depends. It goes back to that client. It depends on that client's, what is his or her level of understanding of the IBC? I just said the IBC. Of IBC. And knowing the trade-offs that you're going to have by putting in such a large amount of cash up front. Yes, you can start the process of IBC right away, in a sense, but you're going to give up some stuff because you're eating up all your insurability. So we kind of unpacked that, and it was a good discussion, and I think everyone in the mastermind benefited from that today.
Absolutely. Enjoy. Hey, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wealth Warehouse Podcast. All right, Paul. How's it going, my man?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. It's been a pretty heavy week, huh?
Yes. So everyone, we're recording 12 September today, and this will come out probably
a week and a half later.
Yeah, in the 20s, yeah. Somewhere, whatever that Monday is. But very, pretty awful week for the country. Pretty awful week for the conservative movement, I would say, the youth movement. So we thought we'd spend at least a couple minutes, at least recognizing Charlie Kirk, and I was a big fan, been following him since the beginning. I really appreciate his treatment of nearly every topic. I can't remember if I disagree with him on anything. I'm sure if you could find a clip that he said something whatever that you might disagree with, but generally speaking, I was lockstep with what his view of the world was.
Yeah. Likewise. I think I took that a lot harder than anybody else who's probably been in the spotlight and been tragically their life cut short. You said just before we were recording, it felt like somebody you knew died. Yeah. And I feel the same way. My boys were all, they were pretty shocked and rocked as well, because they all followed him. He just had a heart for the young people, man, our American young adults just had a heart for them and treated everybody good and showed people how to have disagreements in a civil way.
Yeah, he showed more grace, or he had more grace in his, his pinky finger than I have in my entire body.
Well, then a lot of people do, which was pretty evident after the fact when you got people celebrating somebody getting murdered, which is just absolutely disgusting. And these are probably the same people who have on their profiles, human rights.
Pictures of cats.
Human rights and equality for everyone.
Yeah.
except those who don't share my twisted worldview.
Right.
And then I hope they die. It's just a really sad thing to see. People show their true colors.
Yeah. And I heard a couple of, other conservative, influencers or hosts, I should say. They're not influencers. They're legitimate people. If your enemies celebrate your death, then you lived a righteous life.
Hmm. Yeah. Then you're doing something right.
Yes.
So yeah, that's a good one, man. Well, we lost Charlie Kirk, but I have a feeling we're about to gain 1,000 more, because I think there's a really strong movement amongst young men these days to really pick up the values that maybe their grandfathers had, that had kind of been lost over the generations. And now they're realizing, they're seeing things differently.
Yeah. And I would just, echo what Charlie always said is, we need to be civil and we need to talk, because when we stop talking, that's when things go bad. Right. That's when, it's just, made me, kind of look in the mirror about how I could be better. I tend to get pretty heated on certain subjects, and kind of go, you know, see red and just go all in and,
yeah,
you know, burn things to the ground. And that's not the right, that's not the right way. So it kind of, you know, again, made me look in the mirror and try to just, you know, see the other person's view. And, you know, just watching his videos of, you know, prove me wrong, sitting down with college people. And he always just showed a tremendous amount of patience and grace and compassion for people. And there were people that he helped, like, stopped transitioning their biological sex. He's like, I think you should be comfortable in your own body and maybe go seek some other advice. And, you know, really save some people, I think, in that sense.
So. Pretty incredible life for 31 years, you know, just being 31 years old and the kind of influence you could have over an entire generation and an entire country. He was destined for great things. And I hope this just lights the fire under more people.
Yeah. You know, to me, he was kind of like John the Baptist for youth, American youth. And really, he touched youth around the world. I mean, he went to Oxford and debated them. And so really an international person. He was very well known. He knew Bibi Netanyahu. He knew Nigel Farage. He knew a lot of people in many different countries. So, but again, very sad, very tragic. And it just kind of shows where we are as a country. We're not going in the right direction if that's what's going to happen. We need to really think about that.
Yeah, especially when you have a minority, but still a large number of people celebrating something like that.
Yeah, I feel bad for those people because they're clearly ill.
They are clearly very ill.
Demonic and
they
very
need
ill,
so. They need help in many different ways.
Charlie, you know, we appreciate everything you did for this country and, you know, we'll take it from here.
That's right. And maybe our boys will carry the torch as well.
Yep.
So, well, maybe we'll have this conversation while we're driving over to South Dakota here in a couple of days
next week
with all the boys and one girl in tow. That's all right.
She's cool though. She'll be
She's
all right.
cool. Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it, man. In fact, I think I need to go get another shotgun today. So I got enough for everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's always a great excuse is to get another one. You can never have enough of them.
Yeah. It's a valid excuse. You know, you can't have somebody that doesn't have one. So, yeah.
No. And it's what a fun hobby shooting shotguns is.
Yeah.
It's really enjoyable. It's fun. It's a good time. I look forward to that every year.
So do I.
Anyway, so, back to the infinite banking concept by Nelson Nash here. We're going to talk about a few things today. We you know, covered some current events. Unfortunately, there's other current events that we didn't talk about, but you know, it's just been a tough couple weeks for this country. Today we're going to talk about
pretty close to home here in Minnesota, you know, a couple weeks ago and a school that actually my kid's school played in basketball.
In sports.
So,
right.
You know, a school that I've visited before. All right. Let's pick up and move on because that's all you can do is keep moving forward. So, before we get into really the conversation we wanted to have around infinite banking, I would highly suggest if you guys have not listened to podcast 186, episode 186, just a couple of weeks ago, and viewed the YouTube video on that one, I would recommend doing that. I've had, multiple clients get a hold of me since watching that video and are exploring new ways to start new policies with money that it doesn't change their cash flow situation necessarily. It's, you know, money they were going to use for a big annual expense anyway. And we design policies to help them capture a portion of that as premium before it leaves their hands forever. So go back, listen to 186. View it on YouTube, and I think it'll be time well worth, well spent.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's an hour long because that was our webinar, right? And yeah, it's a very, very, it actually got me thinking and, you know, like, hey, maybe there's something else I'm missing. So I guarantee you there's something that you're missing And what's great is I was able to use that episode just in the last couple of weeks and send it to some new prospective clients.
Cool.
And say, here's what we just talked about this, but here's a video that you should watch on YouTube. And there's the math, there's how it works. And the numbers were actually fairly close. So it's, it's going to hit home with them very easily.
Sure. And even if it's a small policy that you start by doing that, it's a policy, right?
Yeah, who cares?
It doesn't matter.
Yep. You should have policies of varying sizes because perhaps they just were for different things or different times in your life. Hey, we paid off two cars and the kids are no longer in college, so they're on their own. And now we have $3,000 a month or $500 a month or whatever available to go do something. So,
yeah, I just paid four premiums this morning for four kid policies that are coming due this month.
Yeah. I just remembered to pay one of our premiums. It was due on the 2nd. I just paid it yesterday. I was like, oh, I forgot.
Well, that's good. That's not too bad. You got the 30-day grace period, so
yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but I've got another premium to pay in another week. I'll be paying the 5th premium for the month of September.
Nice.
And then I've got a couple in October. But I went like 3 months over the summer with no premium payments. So, if I could choose a date to start a premium, it would probably be like July or August because I don't have any due at that time. But it doesn't matter. I don't care when they're due. They're going to get paid.
They're going to get paid.
Right.
Yeah. Well, sequencing your policies though, folks, and you had this conversation with a recent client, just, you know, it might be a good idea, depending on your cash flow situation, to not have all of your premium due all at one time, especially as you get up into having multiple policies. Like Dave has, you know, 13, 14, 15 policies. I have 12 or whatever it is. You know, if they all hit in July, well, July is an expensive month, which is fine.
Right.
But we try to, you know, just by circumstances that we just found ourselves in, I've kind of been able to spread them out a little bit.
Yeah. And even if you do have a bunch coming due, you could all pay them, you can pay them all in a different way.
You know? Right. You get a different modes of premium, right? You can pay monthly,
different modes
quarterly.
Of premium, yeah. whether you pay just the base, the minimum required, or the base and the PUA. Like there's so much flexibility when those premiums come due that I just did that with a client who was like, I don't have it all. I've got like $75,000 worth of premium coming due in the same month with four different policies. I was like, well, let's look. Do you have this much available? Yep. Well, you could cover the minimum required premium for all of them. And now you've got the next 12 months to fund the rest of the PUA.
Perfect.
So,
that's totally fine.
Completely fine.
Yep. Yeah. Totally fine.
Yep. You're the banker. You get to do what you want. But this morning we had a conversation with some other IBC practitioners that we do this, once a month?
Once a month.
I think, what is it? The 2nd Friday of the month or something?
I only make it when you remind me.
Yeah, somebody needs to remind you because you're so busy in retirement.
I need a home secretary.
So, yeah. Well, but we had, there's what, 5 or 6 of us on the call, all IBC practitioners, and we just get together once a month and kind of talk about maybe somebody's having an issue, figuring out how to get somebody on board with the concept or looking at different ways to design policies based on how much cash somebody brought in. And that was the conversation today. We have one of the guys has a client he's working with who just sold a house and he's got like $700,000 in cash. And he would like to keep that liquid, the majority of it, so that he can use it for things that are coming up. But he also wants to try to funnel as much of that through a policy as he can to capture it there before he spends it, right? Sequencing his dollars, his capital. So we went around the table and discussed that today. So there's many different views and there's no one right way to solve that that equation.
But yeah, the age old answer of, well, it depends.
It depends. It depends. So one of the things you could do is put as much of that cash, first determine what your premium is that you can pay every year, and then whatever's left over, put as much of that cash into the policy as a single paid up addition payment, which a lot of people do. We call that the lump sum. Oftentimes people call that, Some people call that like overfunding, which I don't say that. That doesn't make any sense, but
can't overfund.
Yeah, but you're adding just an additional lump sum of PUA premium that shows up as the vast majority of that shows up as cash value right away. So it really increases the pool of capital you have. And a lot of people like that because one argument for it is, hey, that money is going to be sitting in somebody else's bank. Why don't I just move it to my bank? Even if I need to use it and go request a loan against that cash value pretty quickly. So that is an option. And who would that option be maybe a good thing for? Because that's not for everybody. We don't recommend that for everybody.
No, I would say maybe a business owner that has a lot of cash needs in and out of the business and every couple months, every quarter or something like that. I think that could be an appropriate use. But I think before that, it really needs to be the right person, the right business owner. So it's not just a business owner that has these cash flow requirements, right? And needs for capital every quarter. It needs to be the right person. So that's going to be my job to really scrutinize. So in an ideal world, could the right business owner execute that scenario with a large lump sum of PUA up in the beginning? Yes. Are there a lot of you out there that could do that? Yeah, maybe, right? But it needs to be treated, that's not free money. That is money that ought to be replenished, right? Otherwise, you're stealing the peas.
Right, so you have
17 cents a can.
You got to have a really good handle on infinite banking before you engage in something like that. I agree. A business owner who's got a lot of cash flow coming in and going out every month, it's a great place to maybe use that cash value to fund capital expenses, buy new trucks, buy new equipment for the company. And then with that cash flow that's coming in, it's just sitting in a bank account. Hey, maybe now you've got somewhere better for it to sit.
Yeah,
you talk with your bookkeeper and accountant and figure out how to track that, but you've got somewhere better for it to sit than just somebody else's bank.
Yeah, you've gotten into the banking business and you've done it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Right out of the gate. So
you've accelerated your timeline to capitalization.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Using existing monies that you already have.
Yeah.
But that's rare. So, it almost never happens. So
yeah.
It's rare.
But it's possible. And that lump sum could be, anywhere from, add another $10,000 on top of your premium in the first year to a couple hundred thousand or more. It's all situational dependent.
Yeah.
Another one that we've talked about this before is the PDF Max, the premium deposit fund.
Yeah.
What would be the advantage of, say, taking all that liquid cash you have right now and putting it into the PDF Max?
Right. In some cases, we'll have people that have, they have a windfall, and whether it's expected or unexpected, but they don't have a huge liquidity need for that particular pot of money, that money that they're receiving. So they might do a PDF Max where they can prepay. We design a policy for them. It's X amount of premium every year. And they're like, hey, and I've done this a couple of times this year, had several PDF Max cases where someone prepaid the premium for a decade. So they took money that they didn't need all of it to be liquid. They have very little relative liquidity compared to what they did have, but they wanted to set it and forget it because they've got some retirement from the military coming up and whatever. So it was just some life changes, and it was just good, like, set it and forget it. And in 10 years, I've got X amount of cash value, X amount of death benefit, and I'll start paying the premium out of pocket at that stage. So it's great for somebody who has that windfall and doesn't necessarily need all of it to be liquid right out of the gate in year one of a policy.
Right. Yeah. So that's another strategic move, which what it's going to equate to is you getting actually more premium than the dollars you actually put towards it. So, instead of, say, you got $100,000. Yeah, give us an example.
I'll give you an example. These particular people took $500,000 So this is going to be really easy. And it equates to about $620,000 of premium.
Nice. And that's because that PDF Max guarantees what, 5% interest? This,
yeah, theirs was 5.3, I think, at the time.
Okay. Nice. So instead of getting paid the interest that that's earning, what that actually does is it equates into getting more premium dollars than you otherwise Correct. Would be able to get for that. And that's Right. really your interest earnings is going towards more premium.
Right. So folks, in simple terms, it's like they paid $620,000 of premium over a 10-year period where they only paid $500.
Yeah. It's like getting a coupon. Hey, get $620,000 for $500.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
That's a pretty good over how many years?
10.
Okay, so they did 10 years. So they did 50. I mean, that's 500. So it's really coming out to what, 60,000 a year or 62,000 a year or something like that instead of 50,000 a year on that 500.
Correct. Exactly right. Yep.
Yep.
Exactly
right. So, and then they have access to the cash value as soon as that shows up. And then, you know, they still have liquidity if they yeah. absolutely needed it. They could pull the money out of that PDF Max fund. They just can't put it back in. Once you pull it out,
correct.
You now have to, you're going to start funding the premium out of pocket.
Surrender, right. You surrender yeah. the rider. And that's kind of like a break. I told, you know, they knew that was a break glass scenario. These are very smart people. So
yeah,
that was a break glass scenario. I don't need to do anything, you know. So this was done with purpose and intent. And it was their idea. And that, you know, I floated, hey, this is an option for you. How does this sound? And he was like, that's what I want to do. And this is a, you know, very intelligent yeah. guy.
And how great, because once they start picking up the premium after 10 years, year 11, they pay the premium. That's creating well over a dollar in cash value for every dollar of premium they pay. And they can cut it down if they need to just the base, which is going to be incredible.
Yes. I mean,
the dividend will probably pay the base at that point.
That's how we designed it, really, is the dividend could just about cover the illustrated dividend, the anticipated dividend could pay the base premium in a pinch.
Right.
In year 11.
Yep. So you got a lot of options at that point. But oh, pretty cool.
At that point, it's just like a money printing press, just like yeah. just stamping dollar bills every year for you.
Yeah. This asset creates cash.
It creates cash.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so that's a great one. Here's another example. Say you had a windfall. I mean, in this, the client we started talking about at the beginning had sold a house. So he got a windfall because apparently he owned it for a long time and he had a lot of equity and now he's got a lot of cash on his hands. You know, what to do with that windfall? Well, I've had this conversation with other clients. And I've done it myself where I had a big chunk of cash and I thought, well, I could create a brand new policy with this cash, you know, creating a premium that I could pay every year and then dumping the rest in as a lump sum. And that would be fine. What I ultimately decided on, because I am involved in some note investing and it's very safe. Very predictable. I get the exact same amortized payment coming back to me every single month. It's a five-year yep. note. I took this chunk and I put it into this note. And then it started paying me an amortized payment back. You know, I got a nice return rate. It's amortized coming back to me every single month. Like on the same day, it hits my bank account. So what I did is I designed a new policy to pay monthly premium that gets auto-drafted like 3 days after that payment hits my account. So now I got this amortized payment coming in. 3 days later, it's going right back out to fund a new policy for me. And that's a policy I'm now hands off for the next 5 years because I know that payment's coming to me every month for the next 5 years. And 5 years from now, I'll pick up paying for that policy out of cash. At that point, if I needed to cut out the PUA, the base is doing all the heavy lifting at that point anyway. More likely, my finances have improved. My cash flow has improved 5 years from now, and I can easily pick up that amount out of pocket.
Yeah,
so I've created a new strategy. Asset. Yeah, 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 it was great, and it's very stress free. I had a 70-year-old who I got a policy on, and that's exactly what he did. He had this chunk of cash, and I said, "Well, let's talk about ways you could do this." And he was actually already familiar with this this program. And he said, I'm going to do that. And we set up the same thing. So now hits his account. It gets drafted by the insurance company, and he's funding a policy, a legacy policy for his kids.
Oh,
and,
awesome.
You know, that, I think that's really the purpose of that policy. So pretty cool.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people, they do worry, Dave, and I think we've dedicated an entire episode to this, but, you know, paying the premium over the long duration, especially as one ages, you know, most of our clients have at least a 20-year time horizon before they're done laboring for a wage and they go into the socialist retirement idea.
Yeah. Pull themselves out of production.
Yeah, pull themselves out of production.
Yeah.
But then we have some other clients that are, you know, in their 60s that are still highly productive. So, you know, things change. Maybe you cut down a little bit, but... just remember, folks, the older the policy, the more flexibility you will ultimately have in it.
Yep. The more options you have, the older it is.
Yep. There's almost beyond like year 10, year 11-ish, could be year 9, year 8, year 8 and beyond. There's likely not a great reason unless you really muck something up or just had some bad luck, lost a job, whatever. There's really never a reason to surrender a policy for the remaining cash value.
Right.
There's something that could be done.
If you did lose a job, chances are you've now got access to a lot of cash value that you can leverage.
Yep. While you're searching for that next thing.
That's always my question, because a lot of people ask that, or the answer to that question people ask, well, what happens like 3 or 4 years from now when I lose my job? My answer is, well, what happens 3 or 4 years from now if you lose your job and you don't have access to capital?
Right.
At least now you've got 3 or 4 years of cash value of capital you have access to. Hey, then you just, you know, you got something to live off of. You got something to borrow against to pay your premium to keep it going. But you're sure going to be glad you have it available as opposed to locked up in the walls of your house or a 401k.
Spent on cases of beer or something.
Right. Or a new camper or a new boat. Well, now you got to go sell that for a loss.
A new Harley that just sits in the garage all the time and doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah. So
there's that.
But so there's plenty of options when it comes to having a windfall of capital. And there's no one right way to do it. Totally depends on your situation. If that's your situation, let us know. We're happy to talk to you. We've seen many situations. I'm not going to say we've seen it all. We've been in the business like 7-8 years. So we certainly haven't seen it all, like somebody who's been doing this for decades, but we've seen enough
that
we can at least give our another perspective maybe you haven't considered.
Yep. You know, our friend, I don't know if we want to get into it on this one. Maybe this is a discussion for an entire other episode, but Tom had an example of those clients that I thought, you know, they can't see the forest for the, you know, they're missing the forest for the trees here. But that might be a good one to kind of dissect on another episode. But basically folks that had, you know, people that had access to still working, but have access to 401k money because of their age, right? They're in their mid 60s, it sounded like. So they have no penalties, no whatever. And, you know, owned rental property. Anyway, so we should unpack that for an episode, I think.
Yeah, maybe so. I think the most interesting comment he made, because, you know, Tom was with us this morning in the mastermind group, and he said that the lady said, well, I don't want to reduce the amount I'm putting in my 401k because then my employer might get angry.
Yeah, like, but they don't care.
They don't care about you.
They don't care.
And who? What's more important? If your employer gets angry, you're not funding your 401k, or your personal financial situation.
Right.
I
don't know why. And I've said this about myself. If I could go back and talk to Lieutenant Fougere sitting in Korea, you know, in a room that's 12 by 12, and say, "Hey, man, don't put any money in there. Don't spend it either, but put it in something else." And at the time, hell, a high yield savings account would have been a better place until I discovered this.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If I look back over I was having this exact conversation yesterday with somebody, and we were talking about, an opportunity that's going to pay you 6.5%. I was like, you know, 6.5%, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Every year, yeah.
Yearly and yeah. with no risk. So yeah. if you can get a no risk 6.5%, I'm like, yeah, it's nothing to sneeze at all. In fact, if I look back over my lifetime, if I would have earned 6.5% on every dollar I put into an investment or away for the long term, I'd be so much farther ahead than correct. I am today because of all the principal value I lost in those right. investments over time. If that was still producing 6.5% for me right now, it'd be able to pay my mortgage.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 6.5% is, I would take that all with no risk. I would put all of my money in something like that all day long. I would.
People are like, oh, it's way better.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Good luck.
But how much do you
not
lose?
Without risk, there ain't.
Not without risk. Yeah. So, I mean, risk is the most important thing in my mind. Where's the risk?
That's right.
And what's the return of my capital plan? So, which we've mentioned many times before.
Yep. You're likely your best investment. Don't forget that.
Yep.
You are, regardless of what you're doing with your money, you are still your best investment.
I like to think I was your best investment, Paul.
Yeah, no question, man. Like we're kind of like our trajectories are
yeah, they're pretty much tied at the hip. Yeah.
But it takes, yeah. I told people that it takes one relationship, like one meaningful relationship, you know, to kind of change the, like I, you know, would have been fine, but man, if you hadn't sent me the case for IBC, I've got my car, it's right up there. Yeah. You know, and I hadn't had just the right attitude, like don't like authority, don't like qualified plans.
Yeah.
Always thought there was something wrong with putting money there. Yeah. And then that book just hit perfectly, perfectly to me. And, you know, here I am.
There you are.
Here we are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, there you are sitting in your 1,000 square foot little studio.
You know what he's getting for this place? I'll tell you folks, $22.50 a month.
Wow. For 1,000 square feet.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Where? Oh, in what part of Tennessee?
East Tennessee. I'm in Merville. So yeah. Those of you know, it's Maryville, but it's Merville.
Merville. Yeah.
Merville.
That's funny.
Yeah. Mervil. Merville.
Okay. Well, that's not a bad deal. Man, maybe there are some cash flow and rental properties out there.
You know, once we settle down, I'm going to start looking for stuff to buy because people are moving here in droves because most of their states are terrible, like where you live.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of people coming from up there.
Yeah.
No income tax, folks, low property tax, and people that act normal.
Yeah, people that act normal. They're like, not.
They say hi and how are you? And they're genuinely interested in how you're doing. And tell you.
Yeah.
These are good people.
That's good. Good for you, man. Happy for you and the family being out there. Hopefully you guys get settled here quickly.
I'm about to be homeless at the end of next month. So I told the builder, I was like, if you guys aren't done by like the third week in October, I'm about to be homeless. I'm going to have to go move into our boat.
No, just move into the builder's house.
I'm moving to the model.
I'm moving in. Yep.
There you go. I suppose I could move into our small garage because it has air conditioning in it. Set up some cots. It's got a urinal, a sink. There's no toilet, but we could just sneak into the main
like
house.
Army life.
Yeah, we could just. There's a porta john actually, construction porta john. We could go use.
There always
it's pretty
is.
Clean. Yeah. They clean it every week.
I can't wait to see the Facebook updates on that. All right. Well, we went a little long today, but that's all right. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And again, go check out episode 186 on YouTube. I think you'll get something from it. And reach out if you guys have any questions. So we look forward to talking to you next week. We'll have some hunting stories to share with you, I'm sure.
That's right. Hopefully we, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully good stories.
They'll be good stories.
Yeah, they always are. All right, everybody. Enjoy your week. Until next week, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. If you'd like to have a conversation with us to see how you can become your own banker, or if you have any questions or topics you'd like us to tackle on a future episode, please send us an email to davidandpaul@theibcguys.com.
And subscribe and leave us a review if you're on Apple. Follow and leave us a 5-star review if you're on Spotify. And please share this with your friends. We'll see you next week.